Spirit Catholic Radio, KVSS, Catholic Radio for the Christian community. You've tuned in to Spirit Mornings with Bruce McGregor and
Chris McGregor.
And again, Chris, we're joined today by Mike Aquilina, author of The Mass of the Early Christians and three other books on the early church, all published through our Sunday Visitor. Mike is also the vice president of the St. Paul Center for Biblical Theology. And we have to talk about the Grail Code as well. And of course, the SalvationHistory.com website, which you should be visiting every day.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we're going to be visiting with Mike as we have been quite a bit here in the last few months on the fathers of the church, and we have a great one today, literally.
Yes, his name is St. Leo, but I also have to say, Mike, a website that everybody should go to, and I hit every day because I don't want to miss something, is your blog, fathersofthechurch.com.
Why, thank you.
Love it.
I try to update it every day.
I just think it's one of the nicest looking blog sites, too, that I've seen.
I'm working with good material. My son designed it, so I give him credit for the design, but I'm working with good material because the fathers are still making news even though they've been dead for 1,500 years.
And they have so much to teach us.
Yes, indeed.
They do. Yes, they do.
I love how you start out the section in the book, The Fathers of the Church, the new expanded edition, which is really, really nice. In the life of St. Leo, you say, there comes a time in doctrinal controversies when someone has to say, enough!
Well, the buck stops. Leo.
Yeah.
Yes. Sure. That's a very important time because when we think about his reign, he was in the 400s, correct?
Right. He right smack in the middle of the 400s. He reigned from 440 to 461. So it's a pivotal time in the history of the West, really. We're looking at a time when the church was facing just snowballing problems in doctrine, people going off their own way, and it was really hard to enforce doctrinal unity in the church because the lines of communication were breaking down. The empire was breaking down.
Mm-hmm.
This is right after St. Augustine died, and remember, when St. Augustine died, the barbarians were at the gate of his city.
Mm-hmm.
Well, by the time of St. Leo, the barbarians were at the gates of Rome.
Right.
And they were there throughout his pontificate, coming back and leaving, and so it's a time of a lot of change in the empire and a lot of change in the church because of these aberrant doctrines, especially in the East. What we find is that the church is called upon to fulfill a role that had previously been fulfilled by the empire.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Especially in the West, and it's not too long after this that we're going to find the rise of Islam coming in the East, and then the same thing will happen in the East. So Leo really is a pivotal character because he solidified the authority of the papacy. You know, he established those lines of authority that were going to be very necessary in the coming centuries when everything started to fall apart, and also he clarified doctrine. As you pointed out, you know, he had to say enough.
Yeah.
And he put out this wonderful tome. It's an enormous creed, really. It's an enormous doctrinal statement about the natures and the person of Jesus Christ.
We're joking around, Bruce and I, when we were reading the section, and I was trying to phonetically pronounce many of the heresies that were taking place.
Mm-hmm.
And I just said, I finally gave up and said, it's just the ism schisms. Because
right. Well, the big one he was facing, early on, before he was pope, he was called in as a consultant by St. Cyril
mm-hmm.
of Alexandria, who was fighting the Nestorian schism,
mm-hmm.
Nestorian heresy, really. And he was an advisor on that, but that was before he was pope. The big one that was facing him during his pontificate was the Monophysite heresy,
right.
Mm-hmm.
In all of its varieties, and those are all the ones that you had trouble pronouncing.
Thank you.
but you don't need to know them. They all kind of fall under the umbrella of Monophysitism, and it was a problem because it was a heresy that had kind of gotten a foothold in the imperial capital, and at different points along the way, it had captured the empress's attention, and it was promoted even from the capital. So it was a difficult time. You had people getting beaten up at the councils because tempers were running so high.
Wow.
And you had then these rogue bishops calling a council that Leo would refer to as the robber synod.
Yeah. Uh-oh.
Because they had no authority to do it. They were stealing the authority. Well, they called the synod, and they wouldn't allow the Roman representatives in. So they weren't able to read Leo's tome there.
Not really ecumenical there.
That's right. Well, they were trying to stack the deck. They were just calling in the bishops who were their friends, and they were hoping to weight everything in the favor of this heresy, the Monophysite heresy. Well, eventually, it got caught up in a lot of imperial politics, and we lost a lot of people, especially in Armenia and in Egypt, where we had entire churches breaking off during this time. Right. But Leo really did all that he could to unify the church and to give doctrinal clarity. I think if it weren't for all of the politics going on and all of the resentments that were going on between the imperial capital and all of these provincial capitals, then we might have had better unity, and we might have been able to resist Islam in the next centuries. But we can't have everything. We did have Leo, though, and he gave us great clarity for the coming centuries.
Well, as you said, that's when the church really needed a final word, which only a very strong pope could give. I'll tell you, the Holy Spirit called him at just the right time.
Right, because otherwise the debate can go on forever.
Sure.
You know it because you have kids.
Yeah.
The kids can argue forever, and at some point the parents have to say enough. And that's what Leo did. He was a good father. He was also very influential in the in civil government, because at that time there weren't strong leaders in the city of Rome, and Rome had really declined by this time. It wasn't even really the dominant city in Italy.
Right.
We have other cities eclipsing it, like Milan in the north. But in Rome was weak, and it was vulnerable to these barbarians who were at the gate, as I said before. And Leo actually, there's the famous one, Attila or Attila the Hun, who came with his horde of Huns, and they were preparing to march on Rome.
Mm-hmm.
And Leo was able to turn him back. Actually, he was able to talk him out of it. To get him to promise that he would withdraw from Italy altogether and then negotiate a peace with the emperor, which is a remarkable thing. It's a remarkable thing because the guy really was suffering no great defeats, and he wouldn't have had a hard time with Rome at all.
Yeah.
For Attila or Attila, you say Attila, I say Attila.
Yeah, most correct.
Either way,
right.
It's nasty.
Yes, really, it's very nasty, because the movement that he had going forward, if I remember my history correctly, and you correct me if I'm wrong, Mike, but his ability to be able to conquer lands at that time was not unsimilar to the great conquering forces like we've seen with Alexander or with Napoleon,
right,
or even the movement of the Germans in World War II. I mean, this was a major force coming right at Rome.
And Rome really was something this side of defenseless. It was a very weak city, and he would have had his way with the city. And as a matter of fact, just a few years later, 3 years later, the Vandals hit Rome,
mm-hmm.
and led by Genseric, and Leo tried to do the same kind of negotiation with them, and they wouldn't turn away.
Mm-hmm.
And they promised not to kill people.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's good.
Yeah, it's something.
That's something.
So Leo was able to get them to keep from just burning the city down.
Right.
But they plundered the city for 2 weeks, and they took away everything that they could cart away, anything of any value, and they left. So you see, Leo was working on a lot of fronts. The remarkable thing is he had this enormous influence on Western history and on church history, but we really don't know a lot about his personality.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He doesn't come through that way. He doesn't write with a lot of flash and flair. He just gets his message across in the simplest and clearest way. We have his homilies, we have his letters, we have a significant amount of writing from Leo, but really we never see him. He's such a humble man that he can rule without imposing himself. He was really trying to be transparent so that Christ could shine through. He was a remarkable man, and he had a remarkable mind. I would say a great theological mind, and he was able to assimilate a lot of ideas from the East, we find a lot of strange things in his vocabulary. He used a lot of Eastern terminology for theological realities. Mm-hmm. Like, instead of using the word sacraments, which is most common in the West, mm-hmm. he would often use the Eastern word mysteries. Mm-hmm. And so, in the Catechism of the Catholic Church, there's a great line from Leo that sums up his sacramental theology. He says, "What was visible in our Savior has passed over into his mysteries." So all of the things that Jesus did in his life, all of his healings and all of his teachings and all of his illumination, all of his revelation of the nature of God, that was visible in his life, but now it's passed over into the sacraments, which are mysteries of his life continuing today. So Leo had this appropriation of a lot of ideas from the Christian East. He also was fond of using the word covenant instead of the word testament, which was more common in the West.
Oh, now I get it why the St. Paul Biblical Theology Center likes Leo so much, because covenant is a very, very important concept you have tried to instill in all of us.
It is. It is a very important concept, and Leo understood that. And so did a lot of men in the East, like Cyril of Jerusalem and many others. So we're doing what we can to recover these things now, as Leo did in the 400s.
And as you point out, he comes across on some very, very important doctrinal issues, primarily, you know, on the nature of who Jesus Christ was.
Right, right. Because in the East, with the Monophysite heresy, if you want the canned version of it, what they were doing was saying that Christ had a distinct nature. It was only one nature, and it was kind of part God, part man. It was a hybrid, mm-hmm. But it was only his. So we can't really call him human, and we can't really call him divine. We can only call him what he is, and that's that one nature. Mm-hmm. You know, but this is—it's so important for us to know that Jesus Christ is the same from all eternity. So he is divine. Mm-hmm. Okay. So to say that Christ has a different nature after the incarnation is really introducing change into an eternal person, and we can't do that.
Right.
And the other thing it does is, if his nature is essentially different from ours, then we find that he's not really sharing our human nature. And so it's not really redeemed in the way we thought it was. So these aren't small issues. These aren't insignificant issues. And Leo was courageous to fight them, especially when he had a lot of powerful people on the other side of the argument. But he was. It required someone of his intellect and his ability, and also his authority,
right,
and the willingness to exercise that authority.
I love how you chose for the selections on his helping us to understand the importance of Rome and papal authority, essentially.
Right. Well, what I included in the book was his preaching on the feast of Saints Peter and Paul, and it's a feast day, obviously, that was observed with great festivity in the city of Rome, but his actually is one of the earliest sermons we have on the subject. I think it might be the earliest sermon we have on the subject of the feast day of
right.
Saints Peter and Paul, and he compares them to Romulus and Remus, because Romulus and Remus, you know, the statue of the two boys nursing at the wolf,
yep.
Right?
Because they were raised by a wolf, and they were the founders of Rome, old Rome.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Peter and Paul were the new Romulus and the new Remus, because they were the founders of the new Rome, the Christian Rome, and that is the new Jerusalem, really, on earth. So I love that sermon, and of course it just makes me look forward to our time in Rome when we're going next spring. So
I can't wait.
I can't wait either. It'll be a lot of fun.
Now are we gonna see those kind of spots and everything where Saint Leo was and
and not only that, but those spots where Saint Peter and Saint Paul were, because we'll visit the tombs of both men, and we'll see the tombs. Actually, we'll have Mass at both places. So so it'll be a lot of fun.
Now, you don't mind if, you know, I get a little weepy or stuff like that.
No, I think a lot of people will. I know. Okay. I will. I do every time I go to Rome. It brings that out. It just seems impossible to believe that you're there. You know, I have this friend I have this friend who gets blown away whenever he thinks about these historical sites in Europe. He said they have indoor plumbing that's older than our civilization.
Well, now we want to steer everyone to the website salvationhistory.com. So next May, if you think you'd like to go to Rome with the likes of Mike Aquilina and say Dr. Scott and Kimberly Hahn and see all kinds of places and do all kinds of wonderful things.
And big weepy me.
That's right. And big weepy Chris. You might go to www.salvationhistory.com and just follow the links. You can get all the information on that pilgrimage to Rome next May.
I love it. And to prepare for that pilgrimage, I definitely would have you pick up a copy of Living the Mysteries, A Guide for Unfinished Christians. Because, and especially any of you out there who belong to St. Leo the Great Parish here in Omaha, well, any parish out there, because I think...
Because Leo's a universal pastor.
There you go.
He is. And the reflections that you've chosen for week 7 using St. Leo the Great are very, very powerful.
Well, we tried to choose his reflections on the sacraments and that were relevant to that season of the year, especially when a lot of people are receiving the sacraments for the first time. So we're talking about the Easter season leading up to Pentecost. And Leo was a powerful preacher because he just let the truth ring.
Right.
As I said before, it wasn't his personality that was ringing out all over the place. With some people, like St. Augustine, you're just blown away by the wordplay.
Mm-hmm.
You're blown away by the rhetoric. But that's not the case with Leo. You're just blown away by the truth and the clarity of it all.
Yeah, someone who, again, as you pointed out, I think it's very compelling. History doesn't say a lot about his personality because he allowed his life and teaching of Christ to be how he's defined. Wow.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's
right. Yeah.
I see a lot of that in another one that may be called the Great One as well, John Paul II.
I thought you were talking about Mike Aquilina.
Well, him too.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. I think John Paul is going to end up being one of those, will withstand the test of time.
I think so, too. I think so, too.
Absolutely. Well, Mike, there comes a time in chats when the clock on the wall says it's enough. Have to battle that clock.
So you're going to end with that paraphrase of Leo.
I think he's going to be using that on me all day now. Yeah.
Chris,
teach him a new word.
There comes a time. Well, Mike, we want to thank you again for being with us and sharing on St. Leo the Great. And we look forward to discussing more Fathers of the Church with you because there's a lot of them.
And we have some coming up real soon, so I'm looking forward to that.
Well, until we meet again.
Enough!
Oh, stop yourself.